are the guests
you're on.
Here?
You'll be on. Fran, radio. Fran. Fran, you're on. Okay?
Hi there. This is Fran Lewis. How's everybody today from sunny New York? I want to welcome you to Book Discussion with Fran Lewis. And I hope my guests are here. We should have two. We
have John. There's
here.
One here.
I've got to find the link again. We They're have John here. Augustine, and we have Brenda Perlins. And who's here?
John's here.
Hi, John. Sorry, we had a, you know, a little bit of... Hi,
Brenda's
there.
Here, too.
Brenda's here. Hi, guys. Sorry we took us a little longer. We just had a little technical difficulties, but we're getting there. But I want to welcome you to the show today, and this is going to be a lot of fun, I hope. Marcia, you're here, too?
I think it'll be fun.
Okay. It'll be fine. We're just having a little problems with... The net, so we're going to try. Okay, and I just have to find the link again.
Okay,
I'm missing the link for the show. What can I say? Okay, I would like to welcome John Augustine and Brenda Perlins, and today's show is going to be about a serious issue that is in the news every single day. It's abuse. Wife abuse, child abuse, any kind of abuse that there is wrong, and we're going to talk about that with both of our guests. John Augustine is the author of three amazing novels where he tells a story, and it's a true story, and Brenda's the author of a book I just read the other day, which is really outstanding, Homewrecker. At the end of the show, you're going to decide the definition of the word and actually if it really fits. So I'd like to welcome both John and Brenda. Hi, how are you?
Hello,
nice.
I'm very good.
Very nice introduction. And hi, John.
Hi.
Could you guys tell us how you guys got together?
I'll leave
it to you,
John.
How you met and how you decided to collaborate before we start?
Sure.
Go.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here. Can you tell
us
how you...
Well, I'll tell you. We were on Marcia's show a few months ago. And got in contact after that through Facebook, and we just read each other's books after that and just absolutely loved each other's books. And they have so much in common that it was kind of neat to have to know that somebody was out there writing a book that was, you know, similar to mine, and I think vice versa for Brenda. So we we just started working together, you know.
Except I think John. I think John's a better writer. Nothing against me. I think John is an exceptional writer.
I think you're both very interesting. And to be honest, when I read your book, Brenda, seriously, it was really quite compelling. And you have to really been given a lot of credit to actually share this story with everyone, both of you. So
you.
I'm going to talk to everybody at the same time. And I have to tell you that the show, we're going to just run this show for 45 minutes, usually a little longer. But for some reason, between yesterday, my show yesterday and today, we seem to be having a bit of technical difficulties with the phones for some reason. And yesterday, we had some technical music that, you know, interfaced with my show. So you just never know. Okay, John... why did you decide to share your story with everyone? What made you decide to put it on paper to share, to let everybody know about this?
Well, I had written it for a friend who had been in an abusive relationship. And at some point I just went, you know, I think that we all should, it's such a silent, invisible thing, domestic abuse. And I think we should all be telling our stories, but I can only tell mine. But I thought I should get it out there. At least there's another story out there about it.
Well, I've read over 900, almost 900 books, and I've read an awful lot of books on abuse and, you know, spousal abuse. I'm an educator, so I'm a licensed reporter. So whether, you know, I'm retired or whether I'm not, if I see whether it's an adult or a child being abused, I'm going to report it. And I have in the past. For all the years that I taught in the public school system in New York City, I reported child abuse even if I suspected it. The really sad part, John, is I was never wrong. And I was willing to say I was sorry, you know, apologize if I happened to be wrong. But you know what? Whether you see it for an adult or whatever, it's still terrible. So you didn't use the real name. Did you use the real names of the people in your book, or did you change the names?
No, the names are all changed except for a couple of minor characters who just needed to keep their names.
Okay.
But otherwise,
okay,
everybody's got a different name, including
okay.
me.
Okay. Including you?
Yeah.
Not really you?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess that you
Brian?
Really didn't want... Yeah.
Brian, excuse me. Hi, everybody. Oh, it's Marcia. Hi.
I was wondering if you were there.
I'm like the technical... Right. I'm like the technical... No, I muted myself. I'm like the technical wizard here, which is really...
Thank God.
Bethany's on.
Hi, Bethany.
Bethany's my new girlfriend.
Hi, girls.
Okay. All right. You know what? I'm going to mute myself off. You're on. Okay.
Okay.
I think I wonder if I can take myself off. I don't know. Okay. Because I'm in an appointment
right
now.
I have no problems checking myself on. Well, I was going to start the show today by saying thank God for Bethany and Marcia, but thank God for Bethany yesterday, because if Bethany didn't save the technical difficulties yesterday, it would have been a total disaster. So she's like the technical genius of the group here. I can't do it.
Wow.
Yeah, she's amazing. So John, I was asking, who is Maggie and why didn't it work out? That's one of my questions here.
Yeah, I kind of start the story with her because I had to start somewhere, and that was the first girl that I actually had an idea that we could have a substantial relationship, you know. And of course, I found out that that wasn't the case. But what I didn't find out, which I wish I would have, but it wouldn't have made a very good book if I had, I suppose. But I wish I would have figured out that I couldn't make the relationship happen on my own. And I think that's, I don't know if that's a guy thing or what, but that's something that I've always, you know, I'm going to make this work, whatever it is, you know.
Well, it takes more than one person, and I'm sure Brenda knows that too, to make a relationship work. And, you know,
absolutely,
you can't just take one person. So you can't blame yourself. When things don't work out, it's just like sometimes they're just not meant to be. So who is Emily, and what role did she play in all of this?
Well, at some point when I was working, I met Emily, and she represented to me, she was a little over 10 years older than I was, and she represented kind of what I was looking for in a partner. And from being really beautiful, and she was really smart, and she was outgoing, and she was upbeat, and all those things combined together. I don't think I'd ever seen that all combined together in one person, much less one, you know, girl. And so she was sort of the person who I thought, all right, this is what I want to figure out how to tap into. And at some point, she introduced me to the woman who had started working with her, and her name was Cindy.
And Cindy is where all this begins, right?
Dun, dun, dun.
I know. Well, you know... She sounds like she, throughout all of the three books, and she changes, I have to say. In the first book, she's one way. In the second, she gets more vicious. And in the third, it appears that she's a lot different, She's on an emotional roller coaster, this one, a yo-yo. I'm wondering, she's got so many personality changes. Did anybody ever diagnose her with a personality disorder? Because she definitely has something.
Yeah, I don't know. I know she has been to many psychologists and psychiatrists, but I don't know what the diagnosis has been.
Do you have your own suspicions? You know, she's a little bipolar, I would think. As an educator,
that's what I thought.
You're probably right. She's got a little touch of bipolar and maybe a little touch of multiple personalities in there. And, yeah, she seems to switch off, and at the hair of a trigger, she seems to just go off. So, Brenda, what made you decide to share Brooklyn's story, and is this a true story, too?
It is a true story, and I honestly was not planning on it at all. I had put the story away long ago. I had started writing the story when I was getting married, and I really wanted it to be about weddings. But
mm-hmm.
things changed. It wasn't until after things got ugly with my husband that I decided to share the whole story. Unedited, unapologetic. And now since everything was out in the open, I really felt I had nothing to lose.
Good for you. Well,
Thank you.
You know, there are so many people that go through divorce. I mean, you know, it's very rare that you don't. What could I say? I know. We all go through it. What could you do? And, sometimes when you get it out and when you get it on paper or you just talk about it, it's not that it's going to go away and take away the pain, but it just sort of makes you be able to move ahead. And Brooklyn all her life was made to feel that she didn't feel like she was accepted. Why did she feel that she didn't really fit in anywhere?
You know, she never felt like she could fit in with her peers. She couldn't relate to them. I think she thought they were superficial, not that she was so intelligent or
mm-hmm.
so mature, but she
uh-huh.
really bonded with older people. I'd like to spend time with my mom and her girlfriends. That's when I felt we were on the same level. I was kind of an old soul when I was young.
Mm-hmm.
And I never felt like I wasn't an in-girl. I wasn't a nerd. I didn't relate to anybody. So I really definitely felt like an outcast.
I can understand where you're coming from. There are a lot of families where one sister or one brother feels like they shine, and then there's the one that is just there and just goes about life, just sort of breathing air, and is just there. And that's really sad, I know. What caused the strain between yourself and between Brooklyn and Renee? And did they ever mend the rift? Because that was sad.
It is sad, and it's a sad thing because, you know, she's my sister, and I love her. It's not that I don't love her. I just don't
mm-hmm.
like her very much. Although,
I can understand
you know,
that.
she's never really been the one that's done anything with me. You know, my relationship with my sisters were very difficult after my mom passed away. It was
mm-hmm.
almost as if the relationship just dissolved.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hard because I saw that my two sisters were really abusing my dad. You know, everything
mm-hmm.
with them about money, what he could do for them. And, you know, I used to say to them, why don't you just call dad and ask him about him? You know, you don't have to spend a lot of money. Why don't you ask him, can I take you out for a cup of coffee and let's catch up? But they never did that. And also my parents had a problem with you know, with her lifestyle. She was married with three kids, and you know, they were living on food stamps, and her, you know, they couldn't understand why you would have so many children when you couldn't afford them. And I feel like I'm insulting John, but I'm not. I'm really not. My sister's situation was not good. Her husband, I think, you know, you kind of feel it. He wasn't a good guy. And so that definitely caused a rift. And then, I had an incident with my brother-in-law on
mm-hmm.
New Year's Eve when I was a young girl. And
mm-hmm.
I used to be very close before then. And the relationship really dissolved after that because he really went over the line. And it was ugly, but my sister never knew. Not until years later. In fact, now that my book is out, and I didn't hide anything, I did not change my name because I wanted it to get out, but I also
mm-hmm.
knew the ramifications of it getting out. I knew some people would get hurt. And I think, you know, I hurt my sister because, you know, she's got three children, and they have to read about, you know, the story about their dad. And I really thought about it. I thought maybe I'd take that chapter out, but then I thought, you know what, I'm coming clean. I'm being real. And I kept it in. And so I don't know that my relationship with her will ever mend itself. And
do you think that they're going to decide for themselves whether it's true or false, their kids, or that your sister might say that it's not true and just negate what you wrote just to, you know, to keep them happy and not make them feel that their father did something? Well, we're not going to tell anybody what he did because I didn't put that in the review either. And that other sentence, whatever, I did take it out.
Thank you. I appreciate that because I think there should be something left for the reader, but also because I think that, you know, to me, even though that's the smallest thing of all, but for me, I find that compelling because nowadays, you know, this is an issue, and, you know, and it's a legal issue. So that's why I find that, I think it's interesting.
No, that's okay. That's okay. Usually I would say that my reviews stand the way they are, but I don't like putting spoilers in them, so I don't hesitate that if somebody says to me, you know, that might give away too much. So, John, question. Here we go.
Mm-hmm.
I've dealt with custody hearings because my ex-husband's son came to live with us before we decided it was better not to be married anymore. It just happens. What could you do? And the courts, when you go to court, it's difficult. And why is it that Cindy was able to convince them that she was such a good mother or that they should side with her? It's just, I mean, it's amazing that she got one over on so many people.
Well, she didn't have to convince anybody.
Yeah.
They just assumed. In order for me to fight that, I would have had to completely decimate her character with evidence that I just didn't have.
Mm.
So, you know, the best I could do really was achieve joint custody. That's the best thing I could do.
So she did
everything else.
Everything
went out the window.
And she took everything. But then there were times that she wanted you to come back.
Oh, for sure, yeah. But that was, you know, all of it, in retrospect, I can say this. I didn't know it at the time, but all of that was selfish. She needed something done, you know, to the house or whatever it may be. So.
Mm-hmm. She was doing it for
her.
Well, you know what? You blinded because you just wanted it to work out, which is good. I mean, to a point, but not when somebody is so manipulative. And she's pretty manipulative and pretty smart. That's in the first one. In the second one, she got even worse and more vindictive and horrible. So how did you meet? How did you meet Jan? She seems like a centered person.
Yes, at some point I had moved on from much of the stuff from the first book and went online for no good reason. I had no thought process. I just did it and met Jan, who was living in San Diego. And for whatever reason, you know, I had met plenty of girls. I was a musician, so there was no shortage of girls. Even ugly musicians did girls. So there was no shortage. But for some reason, something about Jan was just seemed kind of like I had found something even better than what I imagined with the Emily character. And so for that reason, I went, okay, I'm going to give this a shot. I had nothing to lose, I figured.
Well, it was, but then again, you took a really big chance because she could have been a psychotic also. You just don't know. So when you met her for the first time, did you just realize that she was absolutely amazing? Because she seems absolutely amazing from what I've read about her.
Yeah, she was beautiful. She was smart. She had my sense of humor, which couldn't believe. I don't know where she got it in San Diego, but we just had so much in common, and it was just kind of like, okay, this seems about right. She had a child that was the same age as my child with Cindy, and seemed like it might just be kind of a good thing all the way around.
That is good because that's Andy, right? That is Andy. So
that's
Brenda, I'm switching papers as we're talking. I think that
I'm all back at you.
Yeah, I've got 42,000 papers here, and I've got John's three books with questions and your book with questions. Okay. Which of your friends were the ones that you could count on? And when Brooklyn, why did she decide to teach aerobics in gym? Why did she decide to do that?
What happened was a lot of people were asking me advice about athletics, and I started to get very athletic around 19. I just thought, it might be kind of fun, and it was hard for me because I'm not an outgoing personality. I call myself an extrovert introvert because I'm shy, but I'm also extroverted. I'm out there. So, I thought it would be really more just to get me out of myself, and it was hard at first. I was so nervous and stage fright. So it was more to kind of, how you got to conquer your fears. Mm-hmm. That was conquering a fear, and it became a good thing. And I think it was good for my self-esteem. So it was all a positive.
Well, it seems that the people, when you went to the gym and your classes, everybody seemed to like it and seemed to, respect the fact that you were doing it and wanted to be friends with you. But then after a while, you just realized that sometimes you can't give away too much information when you're dealing with people. Especially in that type of position, right? Because they take it the wrong way. So, tell us about Gerard. What made you decide to wind up with him?
When I look back now, I think I felt it was the time to get married. I guess because I was. I guess when I met him, I was about 28 years old, and at that time, I felt I was old. I always felt that I was behind on everything. And you know what? He was a really nice guy. Everything was about, what can I do for you? And he really went after me in a big way, very enthusiastic. I mean, he looked at like a guy that was in love from the get-go. And that part was really appealing. I wasn't necessarily in a rush to get married, but I just thought it was time to start settling down. And he was not my type. In fact, when he asked me out, I laughed. I thought it was funny. Not that I wanted to insult him or that I was so great, but he wasn't my type, and he was kind of goofy, But after a while, the goofy rubbed off on me because I wanted to find someone that was going to be faithful because I had a boyfriend before him that was so unfaithful that my priority was finding someone who was nice and faithful. Unfortunately, he had other characteristics that I should have looked at. I had red flags from the beginning, and I just settled. As sad as that sounds. And the heartbreaking thing is that, he's had to read how much I didn't love him. And, that part is heartbreaking. It's like putting salt into the wound. And I didn't want to break a guy apart because he's not a bad person. He just has some real issues. And I think his issues start from childhood divorce. Some people never get over the past.
That is so true. But, sometimes if somebody reads it in print, and it's going to sound wild, sometimes maybe they'll face the reality. And then again, maybe he won't read the book. You don't know. Or either that, or you can send him an autographed copy and tell him how it should have been.
I think I'm sure he's read it. He's contacted my boyfriend's wife. They're not divorced yet. It's not official. And he's contacted her. So he's definitely read it. Talk about salt into the wound. He definitely, I'm sure he was the first person to buy it.
Well, I imagine, and this is going to sound like a crazy question, I know. I imagine in both books, in your book and John's book, John changed all the names and stuff like that, so they don't really know it's him. And if somebody reads it, he could always just say, I just wrote this. It's similar. It doesn't mean that it's so. In your case, it's all true, and everybody knows it. There's nothing that he can do against you, can he?
No, my name is not changed as far as the title. I could have used a different name. But I, in a way, it's almost out of revenge, which I hate to say, but I really wrote it, and I wanted these people to read it. I did. I know it sounds awful, but I think people sometimes get what they deserve. So I wanted it out there. I wanted it there. But as far as I did change all the names, and that I didn't do that until the last minute. In fact, that caused a lot of problems because I don't know if I found all the right names and changed all the right names. But I knew that, you know what, I don't want to have any legal problems.
That's what I'm thinking.
And so I changed all the names.
I don't blame you because you don't know what people are gonna write. I know. My last book, Faces Behind the Stones, well, 2 books ago, I wrote, it's based on real-life experiences that really happened. And the first story, well, somebody figured it out. It was what I think happened to my sister, but I did change all the names in the story and change some of the events. And if anybody that, you know, knows what happened reads it, oh, well, too bad, because you're not really sure what caused her death. So, you know, you just don't know. In your book, John, let's see. Okay, I'm going to ask a question about the third book about Jan. When you found out that Jan was having twins, what made you react that way? How come you weren't ecstatic? I know the job market is horrible because I know my brother is going through the same thing. So it's difficult. So what made you not say, oh great, I'm going to have two boys?
Oh, I was being maybe realistic, just thinking, you know, we just barely had enough. We barely had enough for one more kid, just barely. I mean, we figured this all out, and then, boom, I lost my job, and twins. And I just went, but there's no way we can do this, you know, just instant.
You were ballistic.
I couldn't believe it. I tried to talk the ultrasound lady out of it. I don't know why she wouldn't go for it. But.
No, you just wanted her to say you had one. But I'm curious.
Right.
You know, I know my brother, like I said, lost his job for whatever reason. And I know he collects. They don't have unemployment where you are or any type of things like that to help from the state?
Yeah, I did get unemployment for a time.
Yeah, but
not
a long
time. In the situation we were in, it didn't help very much.
It normally doesn't. It's just like putting a Band-Aid over a large gash at any
right,
time.
Right, right.
I know. So, you know, I'm an educator, so how come you gave up teaching? I mean, you work with kids, and you were working with this program in the third book and helping this girl with her lessons, and it sounds like you're a natural. You wouldn't want to go back and do it? I mean, I loved it.
Well, I had a great time teaching. I really did. And what I think I discovered was, despite all the bureaucracy and the people in offices telling me how to teach and all that other stuff, I found out that I end up teaching naturally anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't need any monetary gain, I figure, from it. I can just go ahead and do what I would naturally do with whoever naturally needs it. And that's plenty for me.
Did you ever decide that maybe you could tutor? I mean, I retired because my mom was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. Otherwise, I never would have retired. And that's when I decided I would do radio and write books and review them, seriously.
Sure.
So, I mean, teaching is the most rewarding profession.
My hope is that hopefully I can get the books out there enough that I can teach through the books.
Yeah.
That's my hope.
Well, you have a lot of lessons in this book that people can learn from, and Brenda has a lot of lessons in her book that we can learn from. I just want to say that there are only two people on the show. It's just John Augustine and Brenda Secor. And I don't normally take calls in from callers, especially with technical difficulties today. And if anybody wants to put a question in the chat room, you know, that's fine. I'll do it. But I don't take callers on the phone because we've, you know, had some issues with people calling in, and we have to make sure who they are before they do. So if you have a question about the book, then you can feel free to put something in the chat room, but I do not take calls on the phone. The calls
you have
I like my
phony,
orders to know.
You have phony phone calls? to get phony phone calls?
We had a few incidents where people have said, you know, derogatory things for no reason or written things in the chat room. And this is a very serious call, and mean calls I don't particularly like. As a matter of fact, if John and Brendan know that on my site, on Facebook, my reviewers can review a book any way they want as long as it's positive. You can't write anything negative because there's enough negativity in the world. I don't need to have any more of it. So I just do this to safeguard the authors that are on the show so that no one has difficulty. Yeah, there was one show last year where someone did call in, and it was a relative of one of the people, of one of the authors on the show, and we had to disconnect the person. Because
wow.
I didn't, yeah, it was kind of like a confrontation, so I can't deal with that.
Oh, you would love that, Brenda.
If it wasn't on the radio and it wasn't live, trust me, I can handle my own, and I can. But I was taught that when you're doing radio and this is Blog Talk and you don't know who's listening from Blog Talk or anything, we don't deal with that on my radio show, so we don't have that.
After reading Homewrecker, wouldn't you love to hear Gerard's point of view?
I don't think Gerard would want to hear Fran's point of view. especially when he teamed up with your boyfriend's wife, and that was really even worse. She's evil. I wonder what would happen if she and Cindy got together. That might be an interesting conversation in a room. What do you think, John? The two of them, they'd hate each other?
Hate each other.
Oh,
because they're both,
they're
strong personalities, I think, and I think they would try to outdo each other.
Well, I have a very strong personality, too, and I dealt with Medicare for my mom and senators and stuff and won every single bout. So at one point they would just say, give her what she wants because we're not going to win, so which is you know, good. It was better that way.
Yes.
So, John, tell me something. You wrote the three books, and in the third book we deal more with Jan and the twins and everything. How did you finally reconcile the fact that you have two gorgeous boys, and how are you dealing with it now?
Well, after about a day or two, I kind of got excited that they would actually have a buddy, you know, for their whole life. So it's actually been quite a wonderful thing.
Kids are a blessing, and they're amazing. And somehow, just through the book, I could feel your courage, and I could feel your perseverance, and I can also feel that even though you had times of, you know, where you just had to get out of there and just escape for a while and chill out, I can tell that you were going to manage to survive. And that your main priority, you know, was Charlie and Andy and your two twins. Even though sometimes Jan just wanted to bop you on the head and tell you, wake up. She should have come on the show with us. You could have heard her perspective also. That would have been hysterical. What is the fourth one going to be? What's the title of the fourth one?
Well, I think it will be Love Scene from Hope.
Oh, that's great.
I think I have to end up at Hope, otherwise the whole thing is for nothing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we have to end up at a place where we see that there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and everything may not be perfectly all right, but everything improves.
Well,
before it improves, hang on to your
seatbelt. Uh-huh. Well, you know what? Everything is imperfect in life, and it's what you make out of it. And those people that are there to support you are the ones that really, really count, and not the other people. How does your family feel about all of this? And have they supported you through this whole thing?
Only my wife and her mother know about my having written this.
Wow.
And everyone else, I don't think they would care. But except for Cindy.
Well, she's not going to find out. Unless she's listening, unless that's the mystery caller. what can I say? Or unless Brenda has a mystery caller.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, I know the area code, but I'm not going to say it on the phone. but I will text it to you, email it to you later. So if it's anybody that you know from a specific area code, we're not saying anything that isn't true, and we're not saying anything that's derogatory. We're just talking about the book Homewrecker. How would you define that word? Because when I finished reading the book, and I understand how, you know, where you were coming from and why you think that, you know, that's the case. But sometimes when a marriage isn't going to work out, it doesn't matter whether you came into the picture or someone else comes into the picture. It wasn't going to work out anyway. So what is your definition of that word? And why would you, you know, think that you are responsible for someone else's marriage not working?
You know, I never, you know, Homewrecker was last minute title and people didn't like
it's
it.
Good
people
title.
Were unhappy, because they thought it was derogatory, like I was putting myself down, but I was being a realist. I mean, you know, a homewrecker could be a lot of things. I mean, you're not just a person, you know, who wrecks a relationship. It could be cancer. It could be recession. It could be a chronic illness in my case. You know, life can get very hard and things can get ruined because of circumstances. You know, I never really thought of myself as a homewrecker, and I still don't, even though they're using that a lot. The last
I don't think so
weeks,
either.
You know, the homewrecker title was just used with Leanne Rimes, and, you know, she's feeling so guilty because she went with a married man while he was still married. And, you know, they're using that title. In fact, I'm kind of thinking that title might be too used up by now. But, you know, it's not a nice title. But for me, it was really a joke. I mean, my mother, my ex-mother-in-law, I always forget, she's my ex-mother-in-law. Her best friend used to call me that. She used to think, you know, I was getting attention from all the old men at Leisure World, and it was a joke, and it was so funny at the time because I was really a good girl. I mean, we thought it was a joke, and I laughed, and I liked it. Now it's not as far-fetched because, you know, you could consider me a homewrecker even though I'm not exactly, I don't want to take responsibility for being a homewrecker. You know, I think that, you know, those homes were wrecked. My home would eventually would have wrecked, and his, for sure, his marriage was on the out probably 2 years before I met him. You know, this was his third marriage, and he was not anxious to pull the plug because it's failure, you know, to have to go through another divorce. So he really stuck with a lot. I mean, you think of Cindy, this woman, you know, gives Cindy a good name. Yeah, you know, I'm telling you, she's out there, and she's still not letting go. That's why there's going to be a book too, because she's not letting go, and she's still sending crazy emails and old photographs of them together, and photographs of herself. She's trying to be very, you know, sexy type photos. Nothing naked, but she's sexy, and so she's not giving up so quick. You know, she wants her money man back. And that's what it was about with her.
That is really sad. That is really sad that anybody, you know, if someone doesn't care about you and the relationship isn't going to work, and even if she got the person back, what makes her think that it's going to work the 47th time or whatever? It's just a power play on her part, I think.
You're absolutely right. And I think she can't believe that he fell for someone like me because, you know, she's done a ton of plastic surgery, and I think she values everything on appearance. You know, and I'm not that I feel like a dog, although she tells me I'm the ugliest person on earth. But
don't believe her.
You know, in her opinion, I am. But the thing is, it's not, you know, it's inner beauty. It's not about the exterior because beauty does fade. And it's sad that everything is based on looks. In fact, I was very proud of that paragraph where I described her plastic surgeries. I don't know if you remember reading. But I really was not going to write it. It's a very nasty paragraph, but you know what? She had done some new things, and I thought, you know what? There she goes, and that was my revenge, and I feel very good about it. In fact, I'm going to include it in book two because it makes me feel so good.
Well, you know, sometimes, like I said before, you have to, both of you have to get it out in order to feel that you can move ahead. So, John, how does Jan feel about all of this being written? And how is she going to feel about the next one? I mean, because basically you're telling her story too.
Yeah, you know, she hasn't read them. I don't know if she will. She's very uncomfortable about the book two stuff. And she sort of, in my opinion, I hope I was able to put this across, she really redeems herself in book three.
Yeah, I saw that.
I hope I was able to convey that because she really did. So, but I she doesn't want to hear it at the moment.
Mm-hmm. But that's when I feel that your title healing was really about your relationship with her, I felt, when I read it.
Yeah, I think I agree with you.
It had all to do with her.
I agree with you, Brenda. It was more like his relationship dealing with Cindy and working it out than it was dealing with Jan, because there seemed to be more rifts in the book with Jan and, you know, more times when you seem to be set apart. And Cindy seemed to be ingratiating her. And yet I think in the back of your mind, I sort of sense that you're wondering, like, what is she up to next? And when is she going to go back the other way? I mean, she even understood the money issue, and she even backed out on that also. So I'm just wondering if, you know, maybe she grew up, and maybe she realizes that for the benefit of her child, not to malign her father. And you know what? That's an issue that a lot of parents do, and that's really sad. I mean, there's not a person in this world who doesn't have somebody in their family that's gotten divorced, and the children are the ones that suffer. And when parents do a number on the other parent to the children, they're hurting them, and that's wrong. You can hate all you want. It's wrong. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, and I really hoped, especially as you're reading through book three, I really hoped that that would be the case. And you're going to find out it isn't.
I didn't think it was, and I said, like I just said before, there's a big question mark as to whether, you know, she's really, you know, repented and whether she's really wonderful. But, you know, in the back of my mind, I learned a long time ago, I don't trust a soul. And I don't believe what anybody says until they can prove to me that what they say is true. And in this particular case, with her personality and being so erratic, I am wondering, you know, just when she's going to fly off the handle and ask for more money or use your son as a pawn. And that is the most horrific thing. So how has this affected Charlie? How has this whole thing affected him as far as school and his relationship and relationships in general?
I think he's very nervous a lot.
Yeah.
I think it's a hard place. It's a hard house to live in.
Mm.
Other than me, I have my whole family sort of helping with that situation, so it doesn't fall solely on my shoulders. So probably the best thing I could have done for him when he was a baby, even though Cindy protested and didn't want me to do it, I got him out there to see his grandparents every week.
That's
so that he could have that relationship.
You know, it's not. It's, she doesn't have to care about you. Well, I think she does in her own way, and she doesn't have to agree with everything that has happened. But the fact that you're telling me that he's nervous, and as an educator, it bothers me, because it spills over to school after a while, and then it spills over to other things. So, does he get into fights or arguments, or does he back off?
He backs off, and that's the thing that he needs to learn, is to be able to stand up for himself without going crazy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be tough for him, I think. But we all have stuff to learn.
I agree, because that can be because of her and because of the way she expresses herself and speaks up for him in her own way, supposedly.
Right.
And unfortunately, he's going to have to learn how to do martial arts or box or defend himself or something like that. I mean, seriously. And
I always tell him, you know, you're meant to learn something from this, and I don't know what it is. Only you're going to know what it is, but wait for it and be ready to learn something, because you're going to learn something from it.
And how does he get along with the other kids?
Pretty well. And Andy can't spend too much time together.
Okay, I can see why.
Andy has his own issues too. He was basically abandoned as a child, and his mom had to kind of look out for them, and was left in Florida with no car and no place to sleep, and you know, it's been he's had a rough road too, and. He has his own things that he's going to have to learn. So I keep trying to just kind of steer those guys kind of in the right direction and do the best I can with them both.
Is there anything that they like, they both like? I'm telling this is the educator part of me coming out, not the host and not the book reviewer. Is there anything that they both like to do that they would actually want to do together? So, any common interest there in books or reading or video games or anything that they would be able to play together that maybe would bond them as brothers?
Yeah, they play video games online together, so they can play from anywhere. If they're together or if they're at different houses, they can always play together, and they do. So I think that's a good thing.
That is a good thing. And you know what? As they get older, their rift might go away, and if they realize that, you know, they can like each other for who they are and not who they, you know, related to their parents, then maybe, you know, you just never know. You know, something good might come out of everything. That's just my opinion. What can I say?
That's what I tell them. Yeah.
You know, the one thing I really got from Don's book is he's a great dad. No matter what, no matter how much poverty and problems, he is there for his kids. And that really, he wrote such passages, especially in number 3, that were so touching, you know, talking about the twins and the love that he has for the children, the compassion that he has for the children are just really very touching.
Really, I agree with you. It comes through. It seriously comes through. And it comes through. I hope it came through in my last review because I reviewed both of them. And as a matter of fact, it's funny because last week I had John's manuscript sitting on my dresser with 17 other books. And I had yours was number 18. And then the same day, I had 28 books last week. I think I have 16 now. And it's just the pile gets bigger. And I'm saying, this is not good. Fran has to read, you know, these books because the authors are coming on the show next week. So I took one book with me and I read it. And then Saturday, was it Saturday? Yeah, it was raining, was snowing or something. I said, okay, this is a good day to read this one. And you know something? I can't wait to read the second one. And I truly hope you send me the second one because I have to know the rest of it. Before I do anything, we have about 15 minutes left, and if I don't do this, my niece is not going to speak to me ever again. No, she won't. My niece Carly is going to be 12 on Saturday. Carly Megan, hi. I promised I would wish you happy birthday, and I'm very straightforward, outgoing, and I don't mince my words ever, and neither does she. She's 12, and your aunt is waiting to learn how to do Gangnam so that she can dance it and make a fool of herself at my nephew's bar mitzvah in April. So I'm hoping she comes up and teaches me how to do the sai because my nephew expects me to get up there and do it. I've spent all my life being overweight, not anymore. And I know how it feels to feel like everyone else can do things and you can't. And I guess the first time I was in a dance recital, I had a mop on my head because I was just the mop. And everybody else had the beautiful outfits. So I do know how you felt, Brenda. And the fact that you can do aerobics, that's terrific. And
you know what? My parents really saved my life. My mom, it's really, everything was about my mom. My mom, you know, I wasn't that overweight, but she sent me to Weight Watchers camp. And
good for her.
You know what? Because it was affecting my self-esteem. She felt very guilty because she blamed herself for everything. But you know what? It really taught me how to eat. I never gained weight after that. I learned. It was a valuable lesson. I really learned. I appreciated it, and I probably never gained weight because I didn't want to waste all the money that they had spent on the camp. You know, that was my big thing. God forbid I gain weight because that would have been for a waste. But you know what? It taught me good eating habits, and it taught me that exercise is a vital component. So it changed my life, and I was there with all the movie star kids. You know, everybody, the parents just dumped them all off, and those kids, most of them, Carol Burnett's kids and the Beach Boys kids, you know what, they gained weight, you know, the minute they left, you know, or they were cheating. You know what, it was a good experience for me, and I think it really altered my life, definitely.
I agree with you. Well, I just lost 85 pounds. It took me a long time to do it. And when my mom got sick, I just sat down and, you know, and ate my way into oblivion. Now I'm 109 pounds. I was 190 pounds just about. And I never gained it back. Weight Watchers was good, but it didn't help me. And the Weight Watchers, we say that Weight Watchers diet is probably the best. My dad was 400 pounds when he died. So he was overweight. So it was really sad. My mom was skinny. My sister was always, when she died, she was very, very thin too. And when she died, they told me that I had to watch. I eat very little of anything. And I think the last time I had fried food was about 5 years ago.
Wow, good for you.
I promised, before I forget too, I've got to say that Marsha and Bethany have Jack Remick, Gabriella and the Widow. Oh, my God, was that book fantastic.
Really?
The show is on Tuesday. I think I think it's 9 p.m. They have to tell me if I'm right. And one of my favorite authors in the universe. Why is the show so late so I can't come? Roger Ellery from England. He is absolutely, I love him. And I've got to get his next book, so I'm going to email him. Oh, it's on Friday. Oh, it's Roger is at 2 on Friday. Well, if I'm around tomorrow, I'm going to sneak in and see if I could just say hello. He is one of the most he's amazing, and he's really, like, you have no idea what Roger's going to say. It's next Friday on January 25th at 2, and Monday at 1, she's got Virginia Grenier has Jack Remick at 1 Eastern Time on Monday. Jack's book, I have to tell you, was my pick of the month, one of my picks of the month. And Brenda, if it's okay with you, it's just a surprise. I'll just surprise both of you. What can I say? I don't know. Do you have a Facebook account?
I do.
Okay.
I do. I have a Homewrecker page. I have a Brenda Perlin page. And now my new book, Homewrecker, the Brooklyn and Beau Chronicles, has a page too. I'm really moving up in the social networking.
Well, if you have a way to friend me on Facebook, then I can have you, because John already belongs to my site. John, you're part of my reviewing your book site?
Yep.
I think you are. What you can do is you can friend me so that you can post your link to your books, both of you, on my site.
Nice.
And any positive reviews, because we don't write nasty stuff on my site, because otherwise Fran deletes it. Yeah, and because there's enough rotten out there, we don't need to add to it in this world, and I don't believe in writing anything nasty about people. As a matter of fact, when I do a book review, if I don't think that the book deserves at least 4 stars, I won't review it. I will write a summary and let the author use it as a promotion, but I will never pan a book, because what I might not think is 5 stars, someone else might. And my reviews are strictly my opinion. And that's how I feel. So if you friend me on Facebook, I can put you on. Homewrecker is really an amazing book. And what I do is every Thursday, I pick one book to be book of the week. So Brenda, if it's okay with you, I am going to put your book as book of the week. So if you can send me, if you haven't already done so, a short bio so I can add it to the site, and I'm going to do it after the show. And I'm getting a time check, and it says, thank you so much for being on my show. I am so excited that you both were on. John and Brenda, when your next books come out, I will definitely have you back on.
Thank you so much. I mean, I'm so impressed with you and your review. I mean, I've never seen anybody take the kind of time, except for Natalie. I have one girlfriend that I've met from Facebook that really wrote me a beautiful review like yours, and I was really touched. I can't tell you how happy I am with that. So I really appreciate it.
I was thrilled to read it. The book was staring at me too long, and it just said, if you don't read me, I'm going to wreck you. It was just speaking to me, the title. And John's book, I mean, I got it over a week and a half ago, and I said, okay, I got to know what happens next. And I had, like, you know, all these publicists saying to me, could you do my book today? I just got an email just now. How come you didn't do this one? Well, I just did 3 more for you. You're going to have to wait. So I am waiting for your next book, and I thank you so very much for being on my show. And one more time, happy birthday, Carly Megan, and I'm so proud of you. And when you get your next book, Brenda, please make sure that I get it. And thank you, everyone, and have a great week. And I'm going to put your book up for Book of the Week this week, Brenda.
Wow. Well, you know what? I'm touched. I'm smiling from ear to ear, so I really thank you. I really do. And I want you to know, I also think that John should go back to teaching or something because he is amazing.
We may put his book next week. I can only do one. So I might John and do it next week. Also, for those of you that don't know, I started it last year, and I'm going to continue it. But I think I'm going to do it in June. Just Reviews is my review site on WordPress. That's where all these nice people find me. So I gave the first Just Reviews 2012 Book of the Year, Author of the Year awards, and I did.
Wow.
And I am any book that I read within the year 2013
It's Marcia. I just wanted to say thank you to Brenda and John for always being they share a lot of our work.
Yeah.
And Brenda, I know she's always sharing my video. She shares everything. So I wanted to thank them both for doing that. We really appreciate it.
Thank
yeah,
you. We love doing your interview changed our lives because John and I never would have met each other or read each other's books. So thank you, Marcia.
Yes,
true.
She did.
Yeah, thank you.
And, John, yeah, I should thank you, too, because John shares all of my links and everything. And thank you for sharing the fact that Bertha and Tilly Sisters Forever came out today.
Oh, good luck. Good luck with that.
I'm going to need it.
Very much good luck.
Thank you so
and
much.
And I have one more thing. I have a little plug. There's a guy named Wiz Green, and I think he's either called Wiz or Mark Green, and he is an amazing writer, so we're going to have to talk. I'll have to send you a link because his book, is amazing. I mean, he's a poet. He's amazing. So you're going to have to find out about him, too.
Well, he's going to have to send me the book, but, you know, poetry books
it's a very intelligent book. I mean, yeah. So, anyway.
Not a problem.
I had to say that because...
I'll just add it to the pile of the rest of them.
It's worth it, though. I just picked it up because I finished John's, and you know what? It's different, and it's a little bit more fictional, but it's just what a writer. It reminds me of J.D. Salinger, just amazing. So.
That is great. Okay, so on that note, Marcia, when exactly is the show with Jack Remick? Because I didn't get
Monday, he's on a book tour from Virginia, and it's a great show. He's on a very long book tour, and he's on her show Monday at 1 o'clock Eastern. He's on my show in the afternoon, I think, or it could be the evening. I'll post it. But he's with Robert Ray, his writing partner, the Bob and Jack's blog that is terrific. So they're both on. And they both
have to get him
on me on Tuesday, and then Friday is Roger Ellery. And you have a show Thursday, right?
I have next Thursday. I have Alan Topol, The Spanish Revenge, and Elliot Patterson, Mandarin Gate. Yes, it should be very interesting. The questions have been approved by everybody, so everybody's happy. And I love Roger Ellery. I'm going to email him. He better send me
his
next
book. It's an afternoon.
You're going to have to remind me if I'm around next Friday. I'm going to sneak in because I love Roger Ellery. He's the best. Okay, so on that note, I want to thank Bethany and Marcia.
Thank you
for doing that, for helping me here. And have a great night, everybody. Good night.
Thank you.
Thank you.